This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, and we'd like to thank them for their support of The Campfire. So, everyone, please go to audiblepodcast.com/campfire. That's audiblepodcast.com/campfire to show your support of The Campfire and get a free book. And we'll be talking more about this offer soon. Audible, they've been with us for years, and they are great. Thanks, Audible.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to The Campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. So glad to be here to share more spooky stories. But first, I want to tell you about something else than I'm doing these days. In addition to The Campfire and all of my other paranormal shows, I have a new free podcast called TV You Grew Up With, and it's exactly that. I interview people from the greatest TV shows ever made, and we talk about those shows, about their experiences, and what they've been doing since. And to give you an idea of the kind of people we talk to, I've got Don Most, who played Ralph Mouth on Happy Days, and Dick DiBartolo, who's been with Mad Magazine for years and was really the brains behind the success of the Match Game game show. Those are a couple of the ones that are up right now. You can check them out over at iTunes and over at TVYouGrewUpWith.com. In coming weeks, we'll have Richard Hatch, who played Captain Apollo on Battlestar Galactica. We've got Judy Norton, who played Mary Ellen on The Waltons. We've got Bruce Weitz, who played Belker and won an Emmy for it on Hill Street Blues. And my friend Kate Patello is going to give us the inside scoop about tech TV. So this and more to come. It is free. It's my new show, and I just thought it would be something that would be fun to do. That's my primary reason. But I hope you like it. Check it out. If you like it, subscribe to it, rate it, review it. Really getting on the map in these early days as we launch a show is so important. So I'd appreciate it if you do it. You can check it out again on iTunes or over at TVYouGrewUpWith.com. Now on to this podcast, those spooky stories that you tune in for, and here they are. We have a return caller. She has been on the program multiple times before. In fact, I think one of the stories was a really spooky Ouija board story, and she has another one. Brianna from Los Angeles joins us, and she has a story about the Queen Mary and a Ouija board. Ooh, spooky combination. Brianna, welcome back to the program. Please tell us what happened.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me back. Yeah, I was just calling because, you know, I vowed to never use a Ouija board again. The last time I used it was, like, as I mentioned before, on 2007, which was the year anniversary after my grandma died. And I had completely sworn off them and everything, but I just happened to be on the Queen Mary ship this past October, 2014, and they do this special haunted house thing every year. They turn the ship, which is permanently docked in Long Beach Harbor, and it serves as a hotel. They turn the ship into, like, a bunch of different haunted houses. So they had some kind of deal where you can spend the night on the ship and get your tickets cheaply. So my three friends and I decided, hey, this would be awesome. We could spend the night on the ship, and sure, it's really haunted, and that's fun. So I swore off Ouija boards, but it turned out that one of our friends that was with us, his brother had passed away in July. He committed suicide for no one knew what the reason was. He didn't leave a note. He didn't have any history of depression. And so this left my friend very disturbed and, you know, looking for answers. And he started going to psychics and all this stuff. And so he was still kind of grieving over this. And, you know, so when we were in there, my friend kind of joked about a Ouija board. And he was like, well, you know, it'd be kind of nice to talk to my brother, Michael. And we didn't have a Ouija board on us, obviously, because we didn't prepare for that.
Sure.
And I thought, you know, why not? We can make one, because I know people can do that. We can just make one, and it's probably not going to work anyways. This is one of the reasons why I agreed to do it. So we literally made this Ouija board out of the hotel paper, and we taped it together with Band-Aids that my friend had on them. And we wrote the wrote the letters in pen. So that gives you an idea of just how crude and rudimentary this Ouija board was. And I definitely didn't expect anything to work, but I also, you know, I felt bad for my friends, so I was going to try to help them out. I wanted to record this just out of curiosity because I was starting to get more interested in EVPs and things like that. So we started this thing, and we started to ask it if anyone wanted to talk to us, and immediately it moved to yes. And I would have thought, you know, maybe it was one of our friends messing with us, but it felt exactly the same, like the real Ouija board felt, that same exact pull, everything that I'd used before, you know, what was it, like 8 years ago. and I didn't think that my friends would be that cruel to kind of, you know, prey on my other friends, you know, grief. So That freaked me out. So it moved exactly like it did before. And so when we asked it if anyone wanted to speak, it said yes. And then it spelled out Zach, like Z-A-C-K. And as I mentioned, my friend's brother's name is Michael. So that was, you know, we're like, okay, well, I guess we'll talk to Zach. So, I don't remember the extent of the whole conversation, but I do remember asking it different questions, and it just kept spelling Zach, Z-A-C-K, to answer every question. And, you know, my other friend who was with us, Danielle, she has a cousin named Zach who has cerebral palsy, and she freaked out thinking maybe he died or something and he was trying to contact her. So she asked it how old it was, and it said 27, something in the late 20s. And that didn't make any sense because her cousin's, I think, 16. So we were like, okay. And at one point, well, because I didn't hear this when this happened, but I listened back at the recording later. Mm-hmm. And at one point we kind of laughed about, you know, sorry ghosts for this Ouija board being so ghetto, whatever. And we didn't hear anything at the time, but when I listened back, I swear I can hear someone whisper, it's okay.
Ooh.
And that, like, yeah. So, yeah. But that was the least scariest thing. And the reason why I went back to listen to this is because what happened later in the night. So, so then this still freaks me out. Like, it's the creepiest thing that has ever happened to me in my entire life. We're all sitting on the ground next to the bed, and the door to the hotel room was like 5 feet from us. And it was around 2 or 3 in the morning, so people weren't really up and moving around or anything like that. And I forgot what we asked it, but all four of us clearly heard, like as if someone was standing right outside that hotel room door, we heard someone say, "It's Zach," like so loud and clear that I thought someone had been listening to our conversation the whole time and was messing with us. That's how clear it was. And you can hear on the recording, you don't hear the actual voice, which I thought was the weirdest part, but you hear us all like scream. And the thing that confirmed it to me was I already was thinking in my head, like, did that just say it's Zach? And then you hear my friend say the same thing. Like, did that just say it's Zach? So he confirmed in my own head what I also heard. So that was really, really creepy. And Danielle and I started crying, and she didn't want to mess with it anymore that night because she was so freaked out by it. But, you know, I guess it's curiosity killed the cat, whatever. I still wanted to play around with it. So I was trying to show my other two friends, Danielle and Scott, that, you know, this thing is real. It works. And so what I did was, this was probably not the smartest thing, but I told them, you know, I had success talking to my grandparents before, so, you know, we could try talking to them again, because clearly your brother doesn't want to come through, or whatever. And I think it did, I think the brother did actually come at one point, but it didn't want to, it acted like it didn't really want to talk to us. It just kept going to goodbye. And my friend had mentioned that when he had spoken to psychics before, they had said he wants to be left alone, like leave him alone and stuff like that. So that kind of like went along the lines of that. So anyways, so I took my hands off the board and I wrote down answers to different questions, mm-hmm. like to ask my grandparents. You know, I wrote down a piece of paper, like their street address, what my dad's middle name was, you know, things like that. They're the name of the condominium complex they owned in Florida, things like that. And it answered every single one of them right, and my hands were not on it. It was so scary, but like comforting at the same time too. And it, at one point it said "miss you," which was like really, that made me cry because, you know, but again, you don't know what you're dealing with. So that's that. But the actual creepiest part of what happened that night happened, we found out in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So after we spoke to my quote grandparents again, we went to bed, and that was around 5 a.m. at the time. And so we woke up the next day, and you know Danielle was kind of joking around, like, "Oh yeah, Scotty woke up screaming last night, ha ha ha," like as if everyone knew about it. And Daniel, I slept next to Daniel, she slept next to Scott, and mm-hmm. Daniel heard Scott freak out and scream like bloody murder. But I don't remember any of this. I didn't hear any of this, and neither does Scott. And Danielle said, when I said, "I don't remember that at all. What are you talking about?" She, like, her face went white because she said, "Brianna, I heard you, like, repeating the Our Father over and over, just, like, parts of it." It was really creepy, like, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Our Father who art," like, just parts of it. And when she said, "Did you hear that?" I just was like, "Shh." And then I like, as if I was mad at her or something. But I don't remember hearing that at all. And it was almost as if I was, like, possessed or something. And Scott doesn't remember any of that either. And Daniel confirmed that I was doing that, too. So it just really, really scares me that, you know, because they say when you use a Ouija board that it can come into your hands and, you know, control it for you and stuff like that. And I know that the Queen Mary is incredibly very active paranormal site. It's really cool to live nearby because it looks just like Titanic, and there's been so much tragedy and things, and you can just tell this eerie feeling just walking around there and stuff like that. And the last part of the story is it was kind of coincidental that the next day, so this was, I think it was October 3rd, the next day was October 4th, which was happened to be the season premiere of Ghost Hunters, of the new season. And it was the Queen Mary was that episode. And I don't really have cable, so I didn't even know about this. And I would start to think, well, maybe the thing's name wasn't Zach. It was trying to get Zach, the host of the show, or mm-hmm. or try to contact him or something. He had obviously been there within the past couple months. And if you watch that episode, it's a very aggravated spirits and stuff in there. So they didn't seem very happy with him, maybe. I don't know. But it's just so, like, hearing that voice say, "It's Zach," it was just the most terrifying thing I've ever experienced in my entire life. And all three of my other friends heard it loud and clear. And, yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, it is certainly spooky, and you always have such great stories. And Brianna, we thank you so much for joining us tonight on The Campfire.
Thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, which is a leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. And now you can get a free audiobook courtesy of being a listener of this program and of Audible by going to audiblepodcast.com/campfire. That's audiblepodcast.com/campfire. They're doing this for our audience members, so you can have a chance to try out their excellent service. And I've told you many times over the years, it's a great way to multitask, particularly as we're going into the spring. It's looking out the window. The sun is shining right now. Makes me want to get outside and walk. And also enrich my mind at the same time. And something where Audible, you know, I've always said they're great, and I do believe that. I have Audible right on my phone and listen to various books, so I'm a user of the service as well. I've always said they're great, but I think one area they've really improved over the last couple of years is in the area of unexplained phenomena, paranormal type things. There are a lot more selections now than there used to be. I'm looking right now at that section, and I can see things like Nick Redfern has a book up there, Witness to Roswell, Haunted, The Incredible True Story of a Canadian Family's Experience Living in a Haunted House. The one that I'm going to be loading up and trying out, and you might be interested in, is called The Rite, The Making of a Modern Exorcist. Ooh, that sounds spooky. I'm looking here. Same Soul, Many Bodies by Brian Weiss. Flying Saucers and the Three Men. The Forgotten Promise, Rejoining Our Cosmic Family. America's Most Haunted Neighborhood. Four Blood Moons. Proof of Heaven. The ESP Enigma. Angels All Around Us. A Field Guide to Demons, Vampires, Fallen Angels, and Other... I think that's... Subversive Spirits, yes. So you get the point. A History of Ghosts by Peter Aykroyd. Dan Aykroyd's, I believe he's his brother. His father's Peter Aykroyd. So he wrote a book called A History of Ghosts, and that's certainly there. So there's really a ton of stuff. If before you were holding back on Audible because you thought, well, they just didn't have the selection in the area of this kind of content that you're interested in, no more. Now you can get right to it because they really have upped their game in kind of this paranormal unexplained phenomena area. And the best way to take advantage of it is just go to audiblepodcast.com/campfire. That's audiblepodcast.com/campfire and sign up and give them a chance. And really, I got to tell you, they're great people to deal with. They have a great product. They have great content. And it really is something that you should try. I know that I've had it on my phone and my devices for years, and I wouldn't do without it. And I love their great listen guarantee. If you choose a book and decide you don't like it, no worries. You can exchange it for another title anytime, no questions asked. And their apps have improved. And it works on almost any device, iPhone, Androids, Windows Phone, Kindle Fire, iPod, and over 500 MP3 players. Bet you didn't know that. So all you got to do is go over to audiblepodcast.com/campfire. That's audiblepodcast.com/campfire. Give it a try and get your free book. I highly recommend it. Thanks, Audible.
Attention iTunes listeners, your iTunes reviews put Jim's shows in the spotlight. If you enjoy Campfire, the Paranormal Podcast, and the Paranormal Report, please go to iTunes today and rate the shows. Plus, be sure to write a 2 or 3 sentence blurb on why they are the best paranormal podcasts on the planet. Thanks for your help in spreading the word. Jim appreciates it. And now, back to the show.
Next up on the campfire is Tommy. He's been listening for 2 or 3 years. Originally, he got introduced via our old app, and now we have a new app, Jim Harold Central. So glad that he found us that way. And he has a story about a dream, and he's from Long Island, New York. We're so glad to have him on the line. Tommy, thank you for joining us, and tell us what happened.
Okay, this happened around 2003, I guess it was. I used to go out on Friday or Saturday nights to a particular bar that was near my house, and I could walk there, so I wouldn't have to worry about driving right. And whatnot. And it was a pretty jumping place and whatnot. Well, anyway, there was a girl that used to come in there, and I found myself somewhat attracted to her, but in a kind of strange way, like I'd never been attracted to somebody before, and it was very magnetic. And another strange thing about her was her eyes seemed to be black, like almost like not have any, I guess, the iris part of the eye.
Almost like the black-eyed kids that we hear about, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but her eyes were, like, magnetically, like, attractive, and I almost was, like, afraid of her. I mean, I couldn't, like, talk to her. She'd sit at the bar stool next to me, and I'd get, the cold kind of feet thing going on, which is normally not what happens to me. There was some kind of presence about her that was, it was so magnetic, it was like, like staring into the sun, so to speak, for lack of a better analogy. I would look forward to seeing her come in there, and it seemed like she would come in around, the bars in New York close at 4, like around 3 in the morning, so it would seem like she might have gone out clubbing and then just dropped into the neighborhood bar before going in or whatnot, but it was just strange that she'd always be coming in around 3 in the morning.
Right.
So one night, she was like flirting with some guy in the most like seedy part of the bar where like the restrooms are and whatnot, and I decided to ask the bartender, who I had like a rapport with, about her. I said, this girl, I see her all the time. I didn't let him know that I was to her or whatnot. Do you know anything about her? And he's like, oh, what girl? And I like described her, and he goes, oh, she's a floozy or whatnot. So in my mind right then and there, I kind of just like wrote her off as like, well, don't even like bother. But then all of a sudden, this like sinking, like kind of feeling came over me, like I hurt somebody really bad. But it was strange. I didn't like talk to her or anything like that. And subsequently thereafter, I would come to the bar, and she was never there anymore. I would never see her. About like a year later, and I don't know like there might be symbolism involved here, but I don't know why, like, certain things were in the dream that were in the dream. But I walked into the bar in the dream, and it seemed very lucid, like I didn't even know I was dreaming, like it felt like I was just going there again.
Right.
And there was nobody there. The place was, like, empty. And all of a sudden, there's like a little hallway where like the bar was, and then there was like a partition and a break like in the middle of it. And then there was like a dining room kind of area with booths and tables and whatnot. She came out like from that break and came towards me and said, "Who are you expecting? Were you looking for somebody?" And she kept like pushing me, and then like pushed me out the front door of the bar, and then I wound up getting into a car with her, which was like a 64 Chevy. I don't even know if that's significant or whatnot. And she's driving with me. And then all of a sudden, like, we come to a railroad crossing, and she turns directly onto the tracks, and a train is like coming for the car. And she looks at me and she goes, "What were you afraid of? A train wreck?" And then I woke up. I woke up because, you know, like I'm believing I'm about to get killed by a train,
yeah.
You know? And then I woke up like in my bed with my heart beating, and I'm like, "Oh my God, oh thank God that was a dream." And then as an afterthought, I said to myself, you know, I wonder whatever did happen to that girl. I mean, I never saw her again after that one night. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't like a voice said to me. It was almost like it was just mainlined information into my head said, "Go to the Fulton Street pub this Friday and you'll see her." And I'm like, "Fulton Street pub? I haven't gone there in like 20 years, and that seemed like a bad bar or whatever, not a place like I'd want to go." And so I kept like thinking through the rest of the day, you know, it's strange that some notion like that would occur to me. And then I challenged myself. I said, "Listen, just next Friday, go there, you know, if it's dead or if it's not like a nice place to be, just get in a cab and go to your regular spot."
Right.
So then this is really weird. So then I went to work, I think it was the next day, and I went out of my dinner break, and I came to a railroad crossing, and there was a car on the train tracks, positioned just like that. Not the same kind of car, but it was just odd. And then there was all people like pulling over and walking up to it and shaking it and whatnot and looking inside. And then the train came, and then I like got my car like away from the tracks, and the train hit the thing and pow. And then I was like, "Whoa!" And it didn't like catch on fire there. I remember it just like sparked and whatnot. But I just thought that was like really strange,
because
it wasn't like it was hit. And then I was like thinking about like the dream I had and everything. And I was like, "Oh, that's bizarre." And then I went back to work, and the next day it was in the paper that the car had gotten hit, but nobody was in the car. Somebody, you know, went off the road and got it stuck there or whatnot, and that it caused all this mayhem on the railroad, and had to repair it, and it caused all kinds of delays and everything. So I'm guessing I had that dream like on a Tuesday, I'm thinking it was, and it told me to go there on a Friday. So that was like on Wednesday. So then like on Thursday, I'm driving home from work, and it's like absolutely pouring, like torrential rain. And it's saying on the radio that we're going to have this for like the next 3 days, which would mean that it was going to be raining on Friday night too. So I said to myself, you know what? You know, maybe I'm not going to go there. I don't want to, you know, go out in this rain and whatnot. And then on the radio in the car, all of a sudden there's an advertisement for the Fulton Street Pub, which like I'd never heard like on the radio before. Like, and then saying, "Oh, this you know, band was going to be there playing all the songs from the 70s, R&B and rock and everything." I said, "Well, it sounds like a pretty cool band or whatever. But, you know, maybe I'll go. I mean, that's too much of a clue. I should definitely
right.
go." So then I work in the evening. So I'm off on this Friday because I have to work that weekend. And it's a good night to go out. I would either go out on Saturday or Friday, depending on the whether I was off on Friday or Saturday. So I was definitely off on this Friday. So it's really a torrential rain, like at the time that I'm going to go out. And I'm like thinking, you know, maybe I shouldn't do this. And then just like that morning, I woke up all of a sudden, just information. Like, it wasn't like a voice whispering in my ear. It was like just mainlined information said, well, then you'll never know, will you? You know what I mean? So I was like, all right, that's just too weird. I'm doing it. So I call a cab, and I go there by a cab because I didn't want to, you know, drink and drive or anything. And it pulls up to the bar, and it looks kind of like not nice. It's like a kind of rugged-looking guy out front smoking, because in New York you're not allowed to smoke in the bars, with like a bandana wrapped around his head and whatnot. And I said to myself, all right, you know what? I'll just go in, I'll get a drink, and it's not cool. I had the cab driver give me his number so I could call his cab to come back and get me. And, I'll just go in. So I go in, and the band's playing. It's really cool in there. It doesn't, the outside was deceiving. And the first thing I do is I scan the whole bar, and I look around, and I don't see her in there at all. I don't see her anywhere. And then I see, it's a mixed crowd of, white collar and blue collar people, and it looks really cool. So I said, I'm just going to go to the bathroom, and then we go to the bar, and then I'm going to order a drink, and I'll hang for a while. So
right.
Go to the bathroom, come out, I go up to the bar, and the guy's pouring me up like a pint of Guinness. So I'm getting out my money, and I'm standing at the bar. By the way, I scanned the whole bar twice. I scanned it again when I came out of the bathroom. So now I'm getting out my money to pay for the drink, and all of a sudden I noticed a cell phone laying on the bar. It's funny, I didn't see that there before. And then all of a sudden this beautiful woman's hand comes over and grabs it. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna follow that arm up, see where it goes. And all of a sudden, it's her standing there. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Yeah. And she's not looking at me. She's looking like at the phone with a half-cocked smirk on her face. And I'm like, holy moly. I'm like, this is for real. And so I said, I have to talk to her tonight. I have to just say, I think I recognize you or something from somewhere else. Just see what's going on here or whatnot. And it seemed like I had a conversation with her, but it also seemed like while I was having a conversation with her, it was basically I was getting these mainline things coming to me, you really blew it. Your thoughts about me were very impure, so it could never be now or whatever. It was just the weirdest thing. I mean, I never experienced anything like that before in my life. I don't know what it was, how it happened. I can't explain it. Like I said, I've always wanted to see a ghost and other things, but that's never happened for me. This is what I can tell you happened to me, and it's very bizarre.
It is extremely bizarre and one of the best campfire stories we've ever heard. So Tommy, I thank you so much for sharing with us, and wow, you didn't see a ghost, but in some ways, I think what you saw was maybe even more remarkable.
I mean, I don't know. It changed my whole view on life. It seems something I would see on TV. Like this is not something that really happens, and it's just I still, when I think about it, I know it happened, and I just don't know how or why or what the heck is going on behind the scenes. I guess we all find out when we die what's really there. But, I mean, presently, I don't know. Okay, the addendum to the story is I subsequently had met a girl on a train, and I was traveling down to New York City on a train with her. I was coming from upstate New York to Grand Central Station. And I told her the story that I just told you, and she said, oh, that's a fabulous story. That's awesome. I'd like to use it for one of my creative writing classes at college. I was like, be my guest, because, it's a good story. And that night, I went out to the bar, and not the Fulton Street one, but the other bar, and she was in there. And I not the girl on the train, but the girl in the story. And I spoke to her briefly, but it was just, really weird. I was like, oh, that's strange. I just told the girl the story today, and then all of a sudden, there she is. And I hadn't seen her at that point in time, probably in 3 or 4 years, and she actually looked a little different. So it was just another bizarre coincidence, if it was or whatever, but it was strange.
Yeah, very, very strange. Thanks again, Tommy. We appreciate it. Well, we have a relatively new listener, but she's enjoying the content. She's a Plus Club member. She found us on iTunes, and we're so glad. Sarah from the Bay Area out in California, and she has a story that goes back to high school, and those are some of the spookiest. Sarah, thank you for listening and for sharing your story. Tell us what happened.
Sure. Thank you, Jim. So I was in high school, like you said, and my mother had picked me up. It was, I guess, during a lunch hour to go for a quick orthodontist appointment. And we were driving back, and the high school I went to sat next to a reservoir. And we're driving, and we see someone who we both at the time thought was a friend of mine. Her name was Summer. And turns out that it wasn't actually her, but the point of the story is my mother said, "Oh, geez, Summer shouldn't sit there. She could get hit by a car." Mm-hmm. And then, unfortunately, the next morning, I got a phone call from another friend who told me the news that Summer had been hit by a car and passed away the night before. So it was the evening of my mother's comment. So maybe it was a coincidence. Both my mother and I have had similar instances of what could be called precognition.
Sure.
I think it's undeveloped in us, and it's not something that we're aware of at the time, like, oh, something's going to happen. Whatever happened to so-and-so, and then run into them, that later or the next day kind of thing.
And that has to be kind of jarring to have that happen.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you just kind of, it's uncanny, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It is very, very scary. Now, I know you had another story about the death of your grandmother. Tell us that one, if you would.
Yeah, so my grandmother and I were very close. I was the first of 10 grandchildren and kind of a girly girl. And so, we always had a good time. And I am self-employed, and I had not been on an actual vacation for probably 5 or 6 years, and then a friend of mine, we had made reservations to go to Hawaii for a week, and at that point, my grandmother, she was 89, and she had been going through some different, chemotherapy and medical issues, but she was living on her own, independently. She was still very with it, mentally, and at a certain point, it was the issue of, is she going to go through another round of chemo? And, all the doctors, everyone kind of decided, is that really going to help? It's just, so at this point, it was decided that she would go to in-home hospice, which is a great thing because she'd never liked, being away from her home. She wanted to be somewhere in her own environment. And this was like a few days before I was going to leave on my trip for Hawaii. And so I'm talking to my family, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't want to cancel because then my friend is, out on a trip on her own. And they said, well, hospice, it can be, it can be a couple of weeks or it can be a couple of months. I mean, we think you should go. And I did get to talk with her. They're like, we think you should go. She would want you to go. And I guess she went downhill so fast. And actually they're like, you better come home. It was toward the end of my trip. And so I got on a flight just like a day earlier, but she apparently passed away when I was in the air leaving Hawaii. And I think on some level it was, maybe I couldn't have handled seeing her like that.
Just right.
We were so close, and so even though I wanted to be there and I wanted to be there for my family, the timing of that was just, I never go on vacation, I'm on vacation. And then, okay, I'm heading home early, and it was, I guess, just not meant to be that she kind of spared me that painful experience, so.
Yeah, that, again, I believe many times specifically with family members, I believe there's some kind of golden thread that attaches us and that we know things. And in my case, I've had situations where I've had strange, I don't think I'm that sensitive. So I've had weird hunches and things and never was able to hone in on exactly what I was worried about, but then something would happen. So I don't think my personal sense of all that is as strong as some people, but I still think it exists. And I think it particularly exist amongst those you're very close to or relatives or that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Sarah, we thank you so much for sharing your stories. Thank you for listening. I know you're a new Plus Club member as well, so thank you for that. And so glad you are enjoying the programs.
Yes, well, thank you for everything you do, and I hope to turn on as many more listeners as possible for you.
That sounds great. Thanks so much. Well, we have a repeat caller on the line, Rob, who told a classic campfire story on our program before. He's up in Delaware, originally from Ohio, and he has a story about where he works, and it sounds very intriguing. He's been listening since 2010, a loyal listener, so we appreciate it. Rob, welcome back, and tell us your story.
Yeah, sure. Hey, where I used to work now, I just transferred jobs, but I worked at an old a state hospital, and it was called, I can get the name of it, Emily Bissell Hospital. And I think when I hear from Delaware people around here, it's the second most haunted, I guess, with Fort Delaware being the first, you know.
Ooh.
And this hospital, state run, was built in 1912.
Mm-hmm.
Very old building.
Sure.
And I guess Emily Bissell now, she was the founder of Easter Seals. Started the whole Easter Seals, you know, campaign money.
Right.
For tuberculosis. Now, where I worked there was down in the lower depths. They called it the 1912 part of the building.
Ooh.
And I was right next to a hallway I really didn't want to go through a lot. And I talked to some of the administration there and all that. And I heard, you know, stories, you know, even the nurses on the top floor, they never wanted to come down the elevator. If they had to get something down in the lower depths, they would like run in and run out as quick as they could. There was one story. There used to be along with the 1912 building, there was a children's hospital there for tuberculosis.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, I heard this story about three separate times. Guy went over to the building had been abandoned for like, you know, 50, 60 years, but
right.
It was still standing. Had the plumber, one of the not plumber, but you know, maintenance guys that had to fix boilers over there because somehow it supplies, you know, heat or something over at the main hospital too. But he started to walk over. He was outside, and it was a wintry night, and he started to walk over towards the building.
Right.
And saw all these little footsteps all around in the snow out front. But then he heard, you know, he's wondering why all these little footsteps are, you know, imprints in the snow. And
right.
And then when he got closer, heard all these children laughing and playing.
Ooh.
And he knew he'd been abandoned for a while. And needless to say, he never went back in there again. I guess people said probably about about a week later or something, he put in his resignation because they wanted him to come there and go back.
Yeah, he basically said, if I've got to go back to that place, you can just forget it.
Yeah, he doesn't want to go in there. So, but my story when I was in there, we were, when I first started the job, you know, I said, well, take me back in here. And he took me way back into the underneath of the 1912 building, which where they used to put, he showed me where they used to put the people that died into this cooler.
Ooh.
That was built down there. And that's where they kept like some of their old records and everything. So I would have to go through there, I'd have to go through there occasionally. And at one point, me and another coworker, we're doing something, and there's this old flight of stairs that goes down in the center of this 1912 building into this dark hallway. It's one of those hallways which looks like a chiller. It has like one light bulb, you know, up there, and you know, it's kind of sometimes it flickers, you know.
Right.
One of those old hallway things, and to the right left are rooms that are totally dark, you know. they don't have electricity. Usually you have to take a flashlight if you want to go back into these rooms. But we started walking down this hall. We passed the one light, and we heard, you know, we were just talking. We heard a clicking of, like, somebody coming up behind us. You know, we thought, well, it's another coworker or something.
Right.
And we turned around, you know, and said, you know, I thought it was one of our other coworkers coming in there, and there was nobody behind us. And we kind of both stared at each other and say, oh, okay, all right, whatever. We'll just keep walking. And again, we started walking, and the footsteps started to quicken the pace. We heard footsteps coming behind us, quickening the pace. And so we didn't turn around. We just looked at each other, and the other guy suddenly felt breath on his neck, and he took off. And when he took off, I took off. So we ran down. It was another, like, I would say, a 20-yard sprint to the doors that went into, I guess, where the main hospital was. And we slammed those doors so hard. But when we were slamming the doors, we heard, like, the footsteps started running after us. So we closed down real quick. We shut the door and bolted and locked it. So that was like that was one of the scariest moments when the footsteps come behind you. Don't see anybody. Kind of unnerves you a little bit.
Yeah, I would think that would be a pretty, pretty scary situation. That certainly sounds like a place that would be ripe for haunting. Sounds like you and others experienced it firsthand. Well, Rob, thank you so much for joining us and for telling us your story on the campfire tonight.
Okay, well, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Enjoy your show so much.
Brad from California joins us now. He heard about me and the shows from the great Coast to Coast AM. So, as always, we're so appreciative to that that legendary platform radio show when they give us a chance to visit a little bit with George and the gang. So thank you, Coast to Coast AM. And, Brad, thank you for joining us. Now, I know you have a spooky story. Tell us what happened.
Well, a little background on that. Me and my sisters inherited my house when my mother passed away back in 2003. My father had died in 1979, and both of them died in the house.
Oh, my.
And during that time, I bought my sisters out, so I took over in about 2004. So it took a while, but I started, you know, you look at things, there's things happening at the corner of your eyes that you can't understand, and you hear some knocks, you're thinking, well, that's an old house, so it's not an issue. And then it was back in 2013, I was taking a nap on the couch, and you know how you take a little cat nap, you don't always go into a deep sleep,
right.
Take a little cat nap. And all of a sudden I felt something push me down into the couch twice. Once, twice.
Hmm.
And at the time, I'm thinking it's my son because I have four children, but he's the only one who has that personality that would come in and do that while I'm, taking a nap.
Right.
And I laughed and said, and I pointed to the chair, get over there, I didn't even open my eyes. And once again, so actually that happened twice. It pushed me down once, and then it did it twice. So when I woke up, I looked over and I realized he wasn't there. And I laid there for a while thinking, wow, that's weird. You know, he's not there. I mean, that was real. I mean, it seemed real. Holy smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And let's progress a little bit here. One time my daughter came in and she brought a dog, and a dog immediately ran to my old bedroom, barked at the wall, barked at the ceiling for, a couple of minutes. And we were joking, oh, mom must be here. So I want to give you that information too. So there's a lot, little things that happen during these two major issues.
Right.
So about a month later, I was, I didn't think much of it outside. I told the kids, this is what happened. It seemed real, but you might be able to explain it away. A month later, I was dozing off in my bed and I felt the same thing. It was once, twice pushing me down into the bed.
Oh my.
But this time I wasn't asleep. So I kept my eyes closed and I said, okay, well, if it happens again, it's real. And it sure enough pushed me down once, twice. And I was just startled, shocked. It was an amazing event. jumped up, turned all the lights off. And my daughter, who was pregnant at the time, would stay once in a while over at her boyfriend's grandmother's. And so she wasn't there. I was by myself. I said, oh, man, what am I going to do here? I think this is real. I got a ghost here. So I just thought about it. I go, well, I've been here for almost 10 years, and actually 10 years, and no one's tried to hurt me, so I got to go to work tomorrow. So I turned out all the lights and got into bed. And I reached over to next to my bed, and I felt a real cool spot. Now, I'm not saying a cold spot because I'm not sure the definition of what a cold spot is. All I can tell you, it was very cool. I reached further across to my closet, and you know, it's 70, 72 degrees. I reached outside. I'm saying 70, 72 degrees because basically that was the temperature outside. So, you know, nothing had changed. I reached my hand outside, and it was not cool. It was 70, 72 degrees. But when I reached right next to my bed, it had to be at least, you know, 58, 60 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So that lasted for a little bit, but I eventually just, you know, went to sleep, and that was it. But it was obviously an experience that was amazing and something I'll never forget.
And did it change your attitude towards the paranormal? Did it make you more interested in it, more of a believer?
It really did. It made me more interested in it because now I believed it. I mean, you'd look at things, you go, well, these people are, you know, they can't be lying. I mean, look, they're normal people. They're, you know, so I believed a little bit of what they were saying, but until it happens to you, there's just no comparison.
And then you believe a whole lot.
You believe a whole lot. So I watched a lot of that stuff, and I'm interested in a lot of that stuff now because I know it's real.
Well, I believe it's real, and I would like to thank you for listening. So glad you found us via Coast to Coast, and thank you, Coast to Coast, again. And I hope you continue to enjoy the programs.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it.
Next up on the campfire is Jeffrey from Los Angeles, California, and he has a spooky story to tell. The setting was a family barbecue, but there was a lot more going on than ribs. There was some real strangeness going on. He's going to share it with us. Jeffrey, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us, and please tell us what happened.
Thank you for having me. Back when I was like around in fourth grade, and my you're in college now, my aunt owned this house. It's a big old house here in Los Angeles in Echo Park, and Echo Park has a lot of old Victorian houses, and she owned one of them. And my family would get together every Saturday to have barbecues and everything at her house. So then one day, I was there. And she wasn't supposed to be there that day. She was supposed to go out somewhere, but she left the house where the family to have. And I went to the kitchen, and I see her there. She's washing dishes, and she's singing. She's a really loud person. And between the kitchen and the living room, there's a dining area. So I go through the dining area into the living room where my cousin is. I tell him, like, why is she still here? I thought she was supposed to be gone. And he says, what are you talking about? She's been gone. So I tell him, no, she's in the kitchen. And then I turn into the kitchen, and the lights are off, and no one's in there.
That's strange.
Yeah.
It's like kind of the opposite of some of those doppelganger stories where you see two of somebody, there should only be one. You're seeing one, there should be none.
Yeah, exactly. It was strange. And yeah, he would tell us like stories of like him sleeping at night and like his blanket flying off and doors slamming and everything. But I never experienced none of that. Only that one experience with the kitchen. And it was really strange.
Yeah, that is strange. And the thing that I've come to believe over, was it been 6 years of doing the show almost, is that the world is a far stranger thing. And things don't always fit in perfect categories. Your sighting is not, or your situation is not a ghost sighting per se. It's not a doppelganger per se, but it's just one of those strange things that defies categorization, which I think makes the campfire all the more interesting sometimes. And Jeffrey, I'd like to thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. I really enjoy your show, and I'm glad I got to share my story on your show.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Well, I hope you enjoyed this edition of The Campfire as much as I did. It's always so much fun to hear all of these stories from all around the country, all around the world. And, oh, by the way, I would love to hear your stories. And to do that, all you have to do is go over to jimherold.com/campfire. That's jimherold.com/campfire. We put some evening dates in there and some afternoon dates, so it can be convenient almost anywhere you're at. And I hope that you'll take advantage of it and share your story, because after all, without your stories, there is no campfire. And also, I hope you'll check out that new podcast that I'm doing, TV You Grew Up With. It's absolutely free. And if you, like me, you love classic TV, it's great to hear from these folks, see what they're doing today, because these people haven't stopped at whatever that big hit was that they were in. They're all very active and doing exciting things, so it's great to catch up with them. Well, that does it for this week's Campfire. We thank you so much for tuning in, and as always, stay spooky. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.